Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion on this Thursday morning. It is the 13th of September, and here in the state of New York, the Empire State, don't you know, it is primary day for Democratic voters. And so if you are of that persuasion, we certainly... What do we do, Libby? We strongly suggest that you go out and do your thing and vote.
Right. If you're... the primaries are... there are Democratic primaries across the state for gubernatorial, lieutenant governor, attorney general. There are other kinds of primaries across the state: Independence Party primaries, Women's Equality Party primaries. There are opportunities to ballot, which is a write-in. So, you know, go. Polls are open upstate noon to 9. Go exercise your franchise.
Downstate, they're already open.
Downstate, 6 a.m. Mm-hmm. to 9 p.m., yep. But upstate mm-hmm. is noon to 9.
And if you don't know whether you live upstate or downstate, because some of our area
to do with the boroughs,
right? Some of our area is what is considered downstate, and if you just check with your local board of elections, they will know. Mm-hmm. But you should probably know at this point as well.
I'm not sure about Westchester County whether they open at 6 a.m. or not.
It's parts of Dutch. It's I saw it listed the other day, but it's a little confusing when you start explaining it to
people.
But
here in the Capital District and points north and west, it's
open at noon
to 9 p.m. Yep. And it'll be an interesting day.
It was fun, though, driving over here this morning. I saw a bunch of people already with signs, waving, trying to mobilize people.
That's the way you do it.
I came through the I had to stop off and drop something off in the SUNY campus uptown this morning, and people were out in force. Mm-hmm. Kids were out in force. Yep. They had their shirts on, and not so much endorsing any one particular candidate, but just getting out and vote and the importance of that. So.
Well, as always, say, if you don't vote, who will?
That's right. Then what do you do? Well, let me introduce our panel. We have a good one today. I mean, we do every day, but
this is especially...
that's a really special panel. So Libby Post is with us. Libby was being a very good, observant
Jew.
Monday and Tuesday, and was not with us.
That's right.
So I said, I can't go a week without Libby.
And I can't go a week without Joe.
There you go. So
and it was Rosh Hashanah, folks, in case you didn't know.
Right.
It's our new year.
It's nice to have you here.
It's lovely to be here.
We love it. Libby, I will say, posted she has this beautiful puppy.
Yeah.
And she posted this picture, and she had just posted it. And I said, I wrote her right away, and I said, oh, great, bring the puppy in today.
That would have been a very special show.
Wouldn't that have been a special show?
It would have been a show that no one got anything done.
But
that's what it's
because
like.
Because this dog, every picture, and this is going to sound like it's a shot, and it's not a shot. But Libby posts a lot of pictures of the puppy, and I'm living very vicariously through the puppyhood of this dog through Libby's photos on Facebook. So I thought, my God, to have that face in this studio would be great. And Libby walked in and she said, "No, you don't want that."
You know, her name is Shana, which means beautiful in Yiddish.
Okay,
it's Shana Punim, which is beautiful face. Shana Madalil, which is beautiful girl. Oh. So that's where we're at here.
I know. Great,
I'll bring her
excellent
in.
Excellent.
I'll bring her in once I know she's totally housebroken. I'll bring her in. She's almost there. I promise.
It has been far too long since Joe Bruschak has been here. Joe is author, a poet, a novelist, a storyteller, and a scholar of Native American culture. He is a dear friend. He is on our community advisory board for this radio station. He is. He's been on the panel many times. We always love having him here. It's great to see you.
I'm happy to be here, Joe.
It's always wonderful to see you. Just so you know, we'll get into this a little bit later, but the National Museum of Dance in Saratoga is having the Saratoga Native American Festival. And the 16th is this Saturday, right?
Sunday.
Sunday at the National Museum of Dance, right on Broadway in Saratoga Springs. This goes from 9:30 in the morning until 7:30 in the evening. Rain and shine, there will be indoor and outdoor events. And this is a little bit of everything.
It is, and I'm almost going to talk about something else, too, because a Saratoga Paleo Run is happening that morning. So part of the roads will be blocked off, so it's best to come after 12:45.
Oh, okay. Well, that's fine. No, that's good to know.
It's a great event. Wonderful fundraising event.
Don't tick off your customers. That's good.
Yes.
Well, excellent. It's the Saratoga Native American Festival, and you've been doing this. How many years have you been doing?
Well, we've done it off and on, so we've been about 15 years at this.
That's great. Well, congratulations, and it's free admission. It's a great event. There's traditional dancing and storytelling and music and foods and arts and crafts and jewelry and demonstrations and a lot of stuff for the kids and a lot of fun. So, Joe, thank you very much for being here.
Thank
Vera
you.
Acarius Kelly is with us. She is Siena College Professor of Comparative Politics. She joins us this morning. Delight to have you back. Thank
well,
you
thanks.
Very much.
I'm glad to be
you
back.
As well. Thank you.
I know thank you.
We had some scheduling issues with the Kavanaugh hearings and so forth, so it's nice
yep.
to have you back in our normal schedule. Well, good morning, everybody. Alan is here. Alan will be here in a minute. He's got a quick meeting, and then he'll be in, so we'll wait for him. Actually, I take that back. We're actually not going to wait for him.
We're not going to wait
for
him.
I think it's time for Junta. What do you think?
Yes.
We're gonna start, and then Alan will be in to join us in just a few moments. All right. So let's get to the what's going on in the world. Of course, the big story is Hurricane Florence. That is the storm that is barreling toward the Carolinas. And you hear these words, monster storm. You hear these words, catastrophic. You hear these words, barreling. You hear these words of fierce. But when you parse that, it seems to be accurate descriptors of what this storm could bring to it. It is expected to begin its assault in the Carolinas. Officials warned of fierce winds, catastrophic flooding, storm surges, and up to 13 feet of widespread power failures. It is expected to start in a few hours. So widespread power failures as they urge residents to get out while they still have time. Florence is now a Category 2 storm, packing sustained winds of up to 110 miles per hour. Is expected to pummel the region for days, starting with heavy winds along the coast Thursday morning. We are already seeing evidence of that. The hurricane will then gather strength and spread inland as the center of the storm edges toward the coast on Friday afternoon. So I think between tonight and tomorrow morning is the best time if you want to watch the cable news anchors be bounced around a boardwalk.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Mm-hmm. And I think those are your best hours to have them be silly. Bringing torrential rainfall of up to 40 inches that will continue through Saturday and Sunday. And the major power supplier for North and South Carolina, Duke Energy, said that the storm could knock out power for up to 3 million customers across the two states, and that it could take several weeks to restore electricity. The storm was predicted to slow, and the eye could stall just offshore, battering the coast with high winds and dropping as much as 20 to 40 inches of rain in flood prone coastal areas. The center of the storm was in the Atlantic Ocean, about 335 miles from Wilmington, North Carolina, on Wednesday evening. That, according to the National Hurricane Center, it was forecast to crawl toward shore on Thursday and Friday. I mentioned this yesterday. I have family, a niece and a nephew who live in that region, and they have evacuated and are out and have pretty much been told to take what they can. They're looking at a direct hit, and we're told to take anything that they care about with them, and that the likelihood that there may not be a home when they return. It's scary stuff.
I think sometimes people can't really picture in their minds what's going on. They see what they have, and they think this is going to be permanent. And even in the face of dire warnings, they don't realize these coastal communities, often built on sand, barrier islands that can be completely inundated by a storm. It's a very dangerous situation, and I find it interesting that people are in some places still denying that there could be an effect of climate change in terms of making this what it is. When the sea temperature is warmer, there is more moisture, and when we find ourselves faced by a changing ecology of the continent and the planet, we have to really be honest about what's going on and be aware of the danger to the future as well as the present.
And we made this point on, I think, Monday's show, that not only as you are seeing the storm, then you also have both the head of the UN come out and say that the issue of climate change is in the hands of is in our hands, and we better not screw it up. And then you also, of course, then have the Trump administration working with loosening the burning of methane and so forth. So
one of the things that I always wonder about is we're right now talking about the impact and the, you know, the immediate suffering of people, but I think it would be really good also to think about how to deal with the aftermath in terms of how can we think about coastline construction. Mm-hmm. Why is it that we have our the infrastructure is so outdated that all the power lines are above ground, when in fact we should consider putting these lines below ground so they're not as vulnerable to these environmental changes? It is astounding to me that in so many ways we don't learn any lessons from prior storms and prior suffering of communities about how we imagine future communities along the coasts or even in urban environments where we continue to expose our power grid to environmental and climate shifts.
Well, of course you're right, but you take a look at...
Alan's here, by the way. Good morning, Alan.
You take a look... I've just slipped in. You take a look at Puerto Rico. Mm-hmm. Nothing could
I was
be
just
a
going
better
to say
example.
That, Alan. That's right. They're rebuilding with the same outmoded designs and technology from 40 and 50 years ago, instead of burying power lines and looking to alternative sources of energy that have actually been offered to them.
Mm-hmm. So, Joe, the question for me then is always, being the cynic that I am, why? In other words, we could say, it's so stupid. Why are we being stupid? But inevitably there's always somebody who's got... There's always somebody who's got something to make out of the way
it's profit.
We're doing
profit.
It's profit. It's all about money, and that this is how the energy folks in the United States make their money is by keeping the grid the way it is, so they can keep repairing it and keeping the power lines above ground. I mean, my partner Lynn is from the South, and when she moved up here, she's from Virginia, when she moved up here, she was astounded by it. Well, because everything's underground there, you know, because they did it the right way. But in New York, our grid is so old, and you know, we live near that high-tension power line that goes all the way across the state.
Don't.
You know?
Oh, yes.
It's amazing, but it's... What'd you say?
I said don't.
Don't, I know, but that's the way it goes. But it's, you know, it's about profit motive, and, you know, folks like the Koch brothers and others who want to keep making their money by doing the way they do it.
And let me just take a slightly less cynical approach, which is that in the face of the days, weeks, and months after a community is ravaged by a storm, you just want to get back to normal.
Right.
And then you also have the cost. And so there is that delicate line, which I definitely think you can walk between rebuilding sensibly, but also and doing it in a way that is fast and efficient, but also taking care of some of the problems for the future. With that said, you get into money, you get into a lot of votes that are taken where the community says, look, I just want to have my power back. We'll see. And also, we still, unfortunately, and scientists will probably yell at the radio here, but we are still in a mindset of, you know, the 100-year flood, which is out the window now.
Because it happens all the time.
Right.
That 100-year flood.
Because the 100-year flood happened last year, and also it's going to happen again this year.
Right. At least once.
Right. But here's the question, you know, I mean, I do understand the electricity issue and the fact that Duke Energy is already saying it might take months to restore energy.
Right.
I mean, that's an outrage. I'm sorry, for the wealthiest country in the world. This is ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
This is unacceptable.
So who's making money is the question, Vera.
So
making money? In other words, are they
And who can make money? I mean, it would seem to me there's an opportunity to make money by changing the system, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And how about in the next few months? It might be thoughtful to consider planning construction along the coast in a different way instead of just authorizing the rebuilding of the same houses in the same locations, like in New Orleans.
That's
when we know they're going to be destroyed in the future.
And that actually was, and I didn't get to that point, and that's you're exactly right. My point being that instead of waiting in the rebuild, what's wrong with doing it now before the storm has.
There's also a little bit of economic determinism here. You know, the people who live highest on the hill generally have the most money. Whereas the great line goes from the great ship Titanic, they put them poor, they put them down below where they'd be the first to go. And that's what happens. So the more at risk you are, probably the poorer you are.
Look at Puerto Rico and properties that are being purchased, destroyed properties that are being purchased by very wealthy community members.
Well, it's the same thing happened in New Orleans. I mean, you know, it was the same sort of stuff. You know, but the people, I mean, look, Trump yesterday made this erroneous, ridiculous, absurd, stupid statement about how it was what we did in Puerto Rico was a shining example of how good we do our work. I mean, he said something along those lines. And everybody's taking him to task force. But and now he's saying
it could have been better. But and maybe you don't know this, but Puerto Rico is an island.
Yes. Yes, I understand. It's an island
with a lot of Democrats on it.
And it's really wet. You know, there's a lot of water around it. There's an island, all that sort of stuff. You know, but he's saying that was, they did a great job there, and now he's saying that the Democrats are the ones who are putting out the numbers saying 3,000 people died, you know, but they don't care. I mean, it's just that simple. They just don't care. The people who made money in Puerto Rico were connected to the Republicans, donors who got this, that contract that didn't do anything.
Okay, but to Alan's point about, but they were Democrats. So
it's true.
We got a letter from Joe, and we only have 30 seconds here. But Joe says, so far, Texas, Louisiana, South Carolina, North Carolina, all been pummeled by hurricanes. Has the electorate in these areas, mostly Republican, changed their minds at all on climate change?
No.
I don't know that we specifically know that because we haven't surveyed for that. I think it's a really interesting question.
But intuitively, what do you think?
Whatever.
Hold your thought, and we'll get to your intuitive thought right after this short break. Joe Brushak playing us in and back to the roundtable. I know I've asked you this before, but the instrument you're playing is what?
It's a Native American flute. Musicologically, it would be called a block and whistle, playing on the 5-note pentatonic scale.
Whoa.
But it's a beautiful piece of art itself. It's gorgeous in its construction.
Yeah, it's made of red cedar, which in the Abenaki language you call malox, which means the deep wood. And it has a sort of a tone that resonates with the wind, the sounds of the birds, and the breath that we all as human beings share with each other.
Beautiful. Thank you very much for sharing. We welcome Hey, Joe Brushak is here. So is Libby Post, Vera Carias-Kelly, and Alan Chartok, who has letters for us. We'll start there, and then we'll move on to some other stuff.
The late Alan Chartok.
Well, don't say that.
No, you were late.
Let's go with tardy,
today.
Not late.
Like, I knew what I was saying.
Okay.
you see, it was a little joke. Okay. So, Jim in Montgomery says, panel, talk about the primary voter disenfranchisement. In New York, there are two sets of rules. If you live in New York City, Long Island, or Westchester, Rockland, Putnam, Dutchess, or Orange, or Erie County, your polls open at 6 a.m. If you live anywhere else in the state, including right there in Albany, you have to wait another 6 hours until 12 noon. It's the law. What's that all about? Is that true?
Yes.
Yeah.
Wow, that's wrong.
Well,
I just saw postings
on my social media where people were complaining that they had to wait till noon.
Yeah. And I think up in Buffalo, they get to vote at 6 a.m. because my friend my friend of mine just posted on Facebook that she voted and she lives up in Erie County.
Think about that for a moment. If you're a nighttime worker, if you work in a nighttime job, you're screwed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Correct. It's about saving money for the upstate boards of elections. Not that I'm saying it's good or bad. All I'm just saying is that's part of it.
Well, you're right, Libby, and I'm always trying to figure out, you know, who gains, who loses. Now, the Republicans are the upstate people. So you would think since they've controlled the Senate all along that they wouldn't let that happen.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, I think that there's this notion that the majority of people vote after work, that the majority of people work 9 to 5, and that the majority of people vote after work, which is true. The majority of people do vote after work, but it's just not the way it's always been.
Yeah, I think a lot of people do it on their way too, yeah. and especially
yeah. well,
I don't know.
At 6 in the morning, yeah.
I think it'd make
yeah,
it a lot
and you know,
easier.
Working hours yeah. have
well,
you
we
know,
could do early voting in this
state.
Working
days.
Hours
there's
is
all kinds of ways.
I always vote early in the morning, get yeah. it out of the way, and right. then I don't forget about it later on. Mm-hmm.
To which I say, did anybody see Ray Graff skulking around the temperature? You know,
you mean the thermostat?
Yeah,
because it's a little cool in here.
It's cold in here.
I turned it down. I put the heat up.
Yeah, heat up.
Uh-huh. When I came in, but I don't okay. know what's happened since then.
Yeah, you got to watch his hands. You got
to
watch Ray's
well,
hands.
Well, let's get back to letters, shall
okay,
we?
Okay, here we go. Okay. Yeah. okay.
Move those chilled
thanks,
fingers, yeah. Alan.
Thanks, okay. thanks, Libby.
Hey, no problem.
Stefan says, per NPR, Zephyr Teachout voted in Clinton Corners, Dutchess County at 6 a.m., you see, early mm-hmm. in the morning. Mid-Hudson Dutchess polls were open at 6, as in Westchester. And that's Stefan from Saugerties.
That's right. So what we said this morning still stands. Call your Board of Elections. What they consider upstate and downstate is very gerrymandered and circuitous. Mm-hmm. So please check your local. Ooh. We can't get into every community that is.
Well, what's your definition? What's your definition of upstate?
Meaning there is.
No,
so
but what's
there,
your definition of upstate?
Above 125th Street for
above
some
the
people.
Boroughs,
I was thinking above Yonkers.
Yeah. yeah. But
you're so funny.
For some people I know, it's above West 14th Street. Yeah. So,
but when it comes to voting, she's right. In Dutchess County, which would not be considered in some corners, downstate can still vote at 6 a.m.
Except that it is considered a bedroom community of New York.
Yes.
You mm-hmm. can get on Metro North and go to New York.
And that's right, and this is where we always get into this when we're talking to people, because you can't, and this will just be a lot of letters, which we
yeah,
don't
right.
we don't need. But
right.
Call your letters.
But just call your local Board of Elections. If you don't know when you vote, just mm-hmm. call your Board of Elections
right.
and find out. But the point is that not all of those bedroom communities have that option
that's
of voting
right.
at 6 a.m.
That's right.
Okay, go
all
ahead.
Right, here we go. And Anthony says, salt, panel. Salt is why we don't, it says here, bury, B-U-R-R-Y, our power lines.
Bury.
Well, I know, but Joe has said, read your letters before you send
right.
them. Our need to drive in the winter is the culprit. Anthony. Now, can anybody explain that one to me?
They're saying that the use of salt on the
yes,
roads
yes.
So let me see.
The use of salt
then would cause
is why
corrosion of the power lines, and therefore is not possible. Which I don't.
Salt
think
is why we don't bury
accurate.
our power lines.
Well,
that
can be the case because there are many other countries where power lines are below ground,
and
where
you,
salt is used, including my country, Germany.
Bury them
deep enough
with yeah. the right kind of
proper insulation
yeah. container.
Exactly,
or,
this
know,
wouldn't matter.
Be a problem.
So there's technology to prevent mm-hmm. corrosion. Absolutely.
And then Sally, said. Our very good friend Sally, writes and says, we have known about the, she is a good friend of ours, I'll tell you that now. We have been known about the changing climate for years in capital letters and 4 explanation points. And I've been advocating that we need to be more aware of where we permit building. With rising water tables in combination with catastrophic storms, we need to review zoning even inland along rivers and lakes. Mm-hmm. Many properties that are within the now designated buffer zone will become part of the actual resource area, in quotes, on parentheses, underwater within just a few years. Septic systems will fail, foundations will crumble, et cetera, et cetera.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Okay, let's just say this once, and then we're not going to take any more letters on this, all right? In New York City, in the counties of Dutchess, Erie, Nassau, Orange, Putnam, Rockland, Suffolk, and Westchester, polls open at 6, and they close at 9. In all other counties, polls open at 12 and close at 9.
That's just wrong.
All right. But I just want we
clarification.
Clarification. We'll say that, and then
say that again.
Okay. How about if I just email this to you?
Okay.
Okay. Yeah, but it is in New York City in the counties of Dutchess, Erie, Nassau, Orange, Putnam, Rockland, Suffolk, and Westchester. Polls open at 6.
Okay.
All right. Go
okay,
ahead.
Okay. So says Garrett in one of my favorite towns, Copaic, New York. Buried power lines are insanely expensive. I grew up in Reston, Virginia, where power lines were buried from day one. But in tidal area like the Carolinas, it isn't practical. where houses are spread out, there is no efficiency in burying lines for the last mile, and burying high voltage lines is prohibitively expensive.
Yeah, well, I mean, I just want to mention the example of the Netherlands coastal lines. And the government actually sponsors.
But everything's frozen there, so, you know.
Hey.
But to your earlier point, Vera, which is we are the United States of America. Does it make sense that for 3 to 4 months, areas impacted by this hurricane, and we don't know what's going to happen, and hopefully nothing happens, but as far as the impact on the power. But if they are saying they're concerned that it'll be out for 3 to 4 months, your point being, why should it take that long? And if it's not burying the lines, then what else can we do to prevent that from happening?
So my point is also, think of it this way. This is a national security issue. Mm-hmm. If you do not protect your citizens from harm, if you do not protect your businesses from such environmental impacts, then you are not doing your job as a government.
I think that one thing that we need to consider is that we're very short-sighted in this country. We think in terms of the next week, the next year, or the next election. Whereas in our traditional native cultures, we always say 7 generations. What do we do now, and how will it affect 7 generations from now? So if we invest a lot of money right now to make a secure power system, it will affect not today, not tomorrow, but generations from now. And so the investment spread out over all those years becomes less than it would be to continually fix and refix, repair and re-repair the same problems.
Right. And, you know, you make that point about the environment again and again and again. Mm-hmm. You wonder why these folks can't look in a mirror and say, I've got grandchildren and they're going to have children and we have to think about them. Mm-hmm. Can I continue?
You may continue. Please do. I think you have 3 letters and we have 3 minutes. So go ahead.
A letter a minute. David says, power lines in the ground. Good morning, panel. I've been told the reason power lines are not buried is that they are too expensive. Poppycock.
We got to say poppycock on the radio.
Poppycock.
Yay!
The other reason I've been told is that the union strongly oppose putting the lines in the ground because they, the union workers, don't make any money fixing the lines, which I think is more plausible thoughts. Well, I don't think it's either the unions or the people who own the lines. I think everybody makes out, as the old saying goes, like bandits.
It's so easy to blame the unions for everything when it's just simply not true.
No.
Yeah.
Because you know what? You need unionized labor to dig those trenches, to put in those lines, and if there's a problem, to fix those lines, because there's always a problem somewhere down the line. Mm-hmm.
Jude says, give credit to Jerry Brown for his Global Action Summit going on right now, taking place in San Francisco. More major speakers and supporters, governors from many states, along with Jane Goodall, John Kerry, Al Gore, Van Jones, and many, many others, thankfully, mean business when it comes to climate. And that's Jude, where else but in Woodstock.
Excellent. Nice.
Good for Jerry Brown.
And JJ says, below ground services, the reason for not placing utility below ground is mainly due to the cost to do it. Yeah. And modify existing services to allow below-ground services. It is also more expensive to repair below-ground utilities. Most of Puerto Rico is mountains and hard rock. Therefore, you would be unable to put these services below ground. It is possible to do this, but Americans are capitalists and only look at the bottom line of what we earn from anything. And that's from JJ.
But there is long-term capitalism and short-term capitalism, and I believe Switzerland is a capitalist country, and they also have mountains, and they also have underground power lines.
Boy, do they have mountains.
They sure do.
Anybody who's ever seen The Sound of Music knows that. And
the hills are alive.
They are.
Right.
With the sound of Alan reading the next letter.
Yes, go ahead.
We're trying to. Brucey says, yes to polling post-hurricanes. That's a great idea. There should be surveys and polls of areas that have suffered these big flooding hurricanes with respect to climate change attitude shifts. Also, survey says Libby should always bring her puppy.
Yeah, I quite agree with that.
Nice letter to end with.
Thank you, Percy.
I must just a quick promotion, just because you mentioned it and I thought of it, but there is, you're talking about Jerry Brown and the work that he's doing in the state of California. There is an amazing book out by a woman by the name of Miriam Powell. And she's written a book. I did not realize the family dynasty that is the Brown family in the state of California. Generations. And and what they have done and their legacy in that state. And she's written an amazing history. She's going to be our guest on the book show next week. And if you get a chance, it's a really fascinating history about a really fascinating, not only Jerry Brown is a major part of it, of course, but just the whole family and that state as a whole is really fascinating.
I remember the papa, Pat.
Yeah, it's an interesting look at someone who has certainly. I mean, you know, he's gonna leave office just as a hero in that state, and it's really fascinating to see what he has gone through, his trajectory.
Oh yeah, he's had quite the.
Ups and downs. Yeah, exactly.
He's the real action hero governor.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
He dated Linda Ronstadt.
Yeah, I was just about to say that. Yes, he did.
Okay, that's good enough for me. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we will continue. You want to play us out there, Joe? Alan Chartok is here, Vera Carius Kelly, Libby Post, and Joe Bruschak. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you with us. Alan Chartok is here. Vera Acarius Kelly from Siena College. Joe Bruschak, who is with us and here to tell us that the Saratoga Native American Festival takes place on Sunday, September 16th at the National Museum of Dance in Saratoga. And Libby Post is here. She normally is here Monday and Tuesday, but she was a good, observant Jewish person on Monday and Tuesday. And so is here today, and we are thrilled to have her.
Which makes me ask you, did you get a letter from the Cuomo administration saying that the Nixon was anti-Semitic?
No, I didn't, because my last name does not come up as a Jewish surname.
Oh, that's interesting.
Neither does Nixon, ho, ho, ho.
Yeah, well, I don't think she's Jewish. I think
no, she's not.
She's raising her kids Jewish.
Her partner is not, but
yeah,
they're raising their kids Jewish.
But the baby father is Jewish.
That's why
the kids are being raised Jewish.
And they were probably converted at birth, you know.
Maybe, but they're good people. Yeah. Here's the great story there. Just one second. I used to work with this guy, Larry Schwartz.
Did you now?
He was quite a character in Senator Orenstein's office. Uh-huh. He always reminds me. Oh, we sat next to each other, Alan. And, you know, and he was sort of on the way out, and he went and made a lot of money in different places. But apparently he, like so many of the others, is still with Cuomo.
Yes.
And he's been his chief sort of volunteer.
Mm-hmm. Both sides of the paper.
Now you took the words right out of my mouth, Joe. That wasn't fair.
I'm still, you know, my attitude.
Just so everybody knows what we're talking about here. You know, Larry said that he was in charge of making sure that this terrible, terrible letter, that accused Cynthia Nixon of being anti-Semitic, and has turned around it and really bit Cuomo right where it should in a tushy, and he is in real trouble as a result of that. Although he's still leading by 40 points in the polls. But wait. So the upshot and what Joe was talking about is his excuse was that he signed off on the letter. This
fire.
Accusation,
scurrilous
mailer, but he didn't turn the paper over where the bad stuff was. That's unbelievable.
Right. The thing is this, you know, there were 7,000 pieces that went out.
Right.
What this will do is shore up Cuomo's vote in the Orthodox and the Hasidic community.
That's what it was all about.
The progressive Jews that weren't going to vote for him aren't going to vote for him anyway. And the other Jews who might have gotten this piece, I don't think it's going to move people one way or the other.
But the big question was,
it was bad. I'm not condoning the piece.
I was trying to get you to admit.
No, it was a totally unnecessary piece.
He's 40. If he is 40 points ahead, which I think many of us doubt. But why would you do that?
Right, yeah. I mean, it wasn't
all
necessary.
All you had to do was turn over the paper.
Yeah, right. It just wasn't necessary to do that.
It's just so slimy.
You know, it was an unnecessary thing to do, and hateful and hurtful. I mean, you know, it the Jewish community is so split, especially right now on Israel and and BDS. I don't support BDS, which is boycott, divest, and sanction Israel and Israeli products. But to throw this out there, it's so late in the game, what kind of impact could it have possibly been had? So.
There was no reason for it. No. There was no reason for Dick Nixon to either permit or sanction going out and invading the Watergate when he was going to win and he knew it. Right. What's wrong with these people?
So I want to read the, this is Jesse McKinley, our good friend from the New York Times, who writes, recriminations over a bridge opening, a false fire with a mysterious author, a cinnamon raisin bagel with cream cheese, lox, and capers.
That gave me the creeps.
So
that's disgusting.
So this is what a contested primary for governor in New York looks like. The long an often bitter battle between Governor Andrew Cuomo and his untested challenger, Cynthia Nixon, staggered toward Thursday's finish line, with each side emptying its arsenal of attack lines amid a fusillade of bad press for the governor. So the question is, even if he wins, is he still damaged?
Well, look, we all know the truth here, and that despite the fact that he says that God will strike him dead. You should strike him dead if he runs for president. He knows that.
That's his aspiration.
Yeah, you know, he wants to be president, which is what Mario couldn't be, and we all know it. And he'll say, oh, well, the same God he referenced before will now say, Andrew, we need you. Go for it.
If Kathy Hochul gets elected. Lieutenant
that.
Governor.
It's a very interesting issue.
Okay,
that's
so,
a good point.
Oh, absolutely.
Very good point.
So, you know, Kathy Hochul has been his lieutenant governor for a while. She was part of the ticket last time. She was appointed when the guy from Rochester, the former sheriff from Rochester, stepped
good
down.
Old, what's his name?
I can't remember his name. Anyway. She's from upstate. She's being challenged by Jumaane Williams, who's a New York City councilman out of Brooklyn. He's got a good base of support in New York City.
He stands a real chance.
He does. I'm not going to dissuade that notion. Everyone's been very nervous about this. However,
if he wins,
it's possible for Andrew to do a repeat performance of his dad when his father first ran. He ran with Carl McCall in the primary as lieutenant governor, but Al Del Bello won.
Right.
And so it is possible that Cuomo could win the primary, but Jumaane Williams could also win the primary, which would make him the lieutenant governor, which would put pause in any of the mainstream Democrats around Cuomo leaving for the presidency. I mean, there's no guarantee he'd win. So if he wanted to throw his hat in 2020 and, you know, blah, 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 there's no guarantee that he'd win, but it's only 2 years away. But just the same, I think it would give everyone pause because then Jumaane Williams would become governor.
Well, yes, that's one point. And the other is that Jumaane Williams, of course, being on some of the ballots, like the working families.
That's right.
And others, and if he wins the Democratic primary, so you'll have this mixed vote, and Cuomo is not entitled to count any, even though he is the preferred candidate in the general election, he's not entitled to count those votes because he has two different lieutenant governor running mates.
Yeah.
Correct.
And I think that's a very important
point. It could
to
be
make
a real mess.
Okay.
Electorally.
Yep. And coming back to the original idea that you started with Cuomo running for the presidency and whether there's any damage, I think the damage already surrounds him related to all the corruption issues and his staffers.
So far, he's 40 points ahead in the ball.
Well, in New York.
He's like Ronald
Reagan. In New York.
He really
but
is Teflon.
I don't know that I buy that argument outside of New York. Okay. I think there's a lot of stench.
Well, that's what we saw. That's what we saw the last time when he ran 4 years ago. But New York obviously is enough to win the governor's.
Andrew wants to be reelected in the worst way. He wants to be president in the worst way. Does he have to do it the worst way?
And that's a great point, Joe. That's a great point.
Well, and so there's two ways of looking at that, of course, is the dirty tricks of a political campaign. But it just seems, and I'll go to Libby on this one because A, she's a political consultant, and B, I know she supports the governor. So let me ask this question.
You know that?
She said that.
No.
Yeah, we know. You said
no,
we know that?
I was trying to be funny.
Oh, I see.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So my question to you is, he didn't run a really great primary campaign, though, did he? I mean, there was a lot of missteps.
I think that there were a great many missteps. I think that he gave her too much credibility.
A lot of self-inflicted wounds.
Yeah, yes. Mm-hmm. I have another way of putting it, but that I can't say on the air. But there were...
That's anatomically unacceptable.
Right. It's anatomically unacceptable. And but I, you know...
Or possible.
Yes. There...
No, it's possible.
Joe's having a crisis.
You know, that's got to be a really little foot. But anyway, I do think that there have been some mistakes. I think the debate was unfortunate. He took the bait. I mean, I think part of the problem is when you're in this kind of situation, if you take the bait, which he did during the debate, and he didn't need to take the bait.
No.
That's when things turn out badly, you know. So you will always see an incumbent who doesn't stay on message, taking the bait, getting veered off message, and then it's damaging.
But you know, it seems like he started this when he went after Karen DeWitt.
Yeah,
And then it just sort of went downhill from there.
And Liz Benjamin, remember that?
And Liz Benjamin, yeah. And a lot of other. I mean, it's just.
Yeah, impulse control has been a problem for him, which it was never a problem for his father. His father knew when to be quiet and when to talk.
And you really have to read the definitive biography.
By someone sitting in the room?
No, Schneerson. No, not my biography of Mario, but this guy
Andrew.
Schneerson about Andrew. You really want to know, as Freud said, character is developed by the age of four and never changes?
You know,
read it.
Right. I mean, my concern is... governance and governing, mm-hmm. and you know, I don't think Nixon has the ability to govern. She doesn't have the experience. She should have run for city council. We have enough celebrity apprentices. You know, we see what's happening in Washington.
Ah, come on.
And
I have to take
and
big
exceptions. You do that. Okay,
I have to
but
take big exception.
You go right ahead. And
I have to
also
take big exception to that.
I want
to
make sure that Kathy Hochul, I mean, I'm more concerned about Kathy's race.
Well,
and she's good,
and
I like her.
Not only is she good.
We have to go to a break, but go ahead.
Not only is she good, but the great thing about her is she had the guts to turn around and say nuts to you to the governor when he told her to get off the ticket because he wanted a different running mate. Yeah. And she said, I'm there, and she's staying there. I gave her a lot of
however, you know what? If she had gone to run against Chris Collins, she'd be going back to Congress.
I wrote it in my column this week. That was one of the great ideas.
All right. When we come back, we'll have letters, and we want to talk about the latest. While we're talking about politics and somewhat local, we'll talk about the ad that John Faso's campaign or those supporters of his.
It's NRCC.
NRCC ad regarding.
Let's wrap our way out, Joe.
Yeah, okay.
I'm running.
We'll be,
one just said 2 points for him for
Delgado.
Yeah, it's
2 points for Delgado.
Yeah.
The Monmouth poll.
All right.
Came out yesterday.
We'll talk about
goodbye.
All that. Right after, hey, Ray, you still with us? All right. No, you're
not.
Ray Graff with news next. That one seemed to be double barrel.
That's a double flute.
What is that?
It has two chambers, one which is a drone and the other which you kind of create different notes. So it works together like cooperation does.
Drone meaning that the note is always the same.
This note is always the same. And then the other notes, of course, mix
We have that on our banjo, on our five-string banjo.
Correct. That's the one solid sound.
Did you make any of these instruments?
I did a little work on this. I do make flutes, but I didn't make the entire flute, just part of it.
Well, Joe Bruchak is with us. Just a reminder, the Saratoga Native American Festival is happening September 16th. That's this Sunday at the National Museum of Dance. Free admission, and it goes all day, indoor, outdoor, rain or shine, and you can find out more by going to SaratogaNativeFestival.com. Libby Post is here, Vera Acarias-Kelly is here, and Alan Chartok. We go to letters, and then we'll move on to some other political news.
By the way, that song I played at the start is one that was composed by the Rouses Point first graders, and it is called Kulipayo, which is All Are Welcome Here.
Oh,
how nice.
So when was that written?
About a month ago, we were doing a workshop with the school, and the kids were writing songs with us.
That's great. That's very cool. Well, thank you. Thanks to the kids, too. All right, Alan, let's go.
All right. Ryan says, Puerto Rico, Are you guys going to talk about the president's tweets this morning? You're talking about Cuomo's mailer, and it's not great, but the president is denying justice for dead Americans, mm-hmm. and I haven't heard you mention it except briefly. The mailer should not be as important as this. Well, Ryan, well, never mind.
Yeah, you know, I will say you're not. Yeah, the problem is that if we will talk about it, but when we mention it, we also get letters that say, "Why are you always spending so much time on the president's tweets?" And that.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
But in fact, it is true that thousands of American citizens died in Puerto Rico, and all I can say is we should remember them, recognize mm-hmm. their suffering, and I hope that all of the Puerto Ricans that were forced to relocate to Pennsylvania and Florida will vote.
Well, having been to Puerto Rico, Dentro del Yunque, and the rainforest, having been to Luquillo, I know what a beautiful place it is and how relatively simple it would be to provide an infrastructure and support for an island we've allowed to go bankrupt. It's part of the United States, and it's a shame in more ways than one what's happened recently and what continues to happen.
So, Joe, do you think that they should, you know, they always have these votes from time mm-hmm. to time. Should we remain a commonwealth? Should we do statehood? Or do we want to be an independent country? Mm-hmm. And inevitably, commonwealth continues to win. I think they would do far better if they were a state.
If they were a state, mm-hmm. they'd have representation. Mm-hmm. And quite mm-hmm. frankly, I think a lot of Puerto Rican people would prefer it that way. But there are things in place that prevent that. And I don't even want to go into it because it would take mm-hmm. an entire show to talk about it in depth. But it is something that is an issue that all Americans should keep in mind, that we can have disenfranchised people, including in Washington, D.C., right. where you have no Absolutely. Senator or Congress representative.
Mm-hmm. I do want to read the tweet now that it was mentioned, but because it is, I mean, it is
it's
horrible.
It's insane.
It is insane. So 3,000 people did not die in the two hurricanes that hit Puerto Rico. When I left the island, this is from Donald Trump as of 2 hours ago, when I left the island after the storm had hit, all caps and after, they had anywhere from 6 to 18 deaths. As time went on, it did not go up by much. Then a long time later, they started to report really large numbers like 3,000, dot, dot, dot. Separate tweet, 1 hour ago, dot, dot, dot. This was done by the Democrats in order to make me look bad as possible as when I was successfully raising billions of dollars, capital on billions and dollars, to help rebuild Puerto Rico. If a person died for any reason, like old age, just add them onto the list. Bad politics. I love Puerto Rico! Exclamation point.
Viva Donald Trump.
I mean, it's just...
Do you guys think every time he makes a jerk of himself, it's a good thing? In other words, yeah, it's reprehensible that he says things like this. But you will notice that he's 6 points down in the polls this week. So maybe he should just keep doing what he's doing.
I think he will, right?
Yeah, I think he will. I don't think there's any question about it because he doesn't know what else to do. But, you know, this is just another racist extension of his mm-hmm. administration. These people mm-hmm. do not, you know, he sees them as Mexicans.
Well,
because they speak Spanish.
And he has this absolute colonial mentality. Mm-hmm. The image in my head will always be that President Trump was in Puerto Rico and the only thing he did was throw paper towels into a group of people. That is his perception mm-hmm. of aid. I mean, it was profoundly shocking, racist, appalling. I mean... I remain shocked by the conduct of this president.
So, speaking of racist and shocking, so the question being asked this morning is, did Republicans go too far with an ad featuring a black congressional candidate's rap lyrics? This is an ad that was put on by the National Republican Congressional Committee. It's called Who Am I? And it is in the race right here in our region, in New York's 19th Congressional District, where Anthony Delgado is running against the incumbent, John Faso. A new ad from the NRCC is being criticized for using racist tropes about black men to criticize a Democrat hoping to unseat a GOP congressman in a tight race. Antonio Delgado is running for Congress He is a Harvard Law School graduate, a Rhodes Scholar, previously a lawyer at one of the country's largest lobbying firms. He was also a rapper, and the NRCC wants voters to believe that his past lyrics disqualify him from representing them in Washington. The ad features cuts of Delgado in 2018 campaigning for the seat, interspersed with darkened videos of the candidate rapping about sex, using the N-word, and criticizing white supremacy. Delgado's critics, including his Republican incumbent, Representative John Faso, have repeatedly brought up his decades-old past as a hip-hop artist to argue that he is not the best person to represent this predominantly white upstate district. The racial overtones of the ad were not lost on viewers. We've already gotten some letters asking about what... And I think I know the answer to this, but I'll ask Alan. If an ad comes out and it's hideous of a candidate, how much that candidate can shut that down, right?
But nah, not really. I mean, you know,
no.
I don't think so. That's First Amendment freedom and stuff. However, I do think there's an interesting aspect to this. In the beginning, there were a lot of people, some of whom I like very much and respect very much, but I didn't agree with them, that this was going to really hurt Delgado because he had been a rapper and because he's a black man during this time. Nevertheless, we see around the country that a whole bunch of new people are coming out to vote. Mm-hmm. So that while there's an assumption about upstate New York, maybe Columbia County, maybe Ulster County, you know, will be for Delgado, the other guys won't. But you know what? The rap is the poetry of our time, and it might turn out to be an incentive to get the kids and the young people out there to vote.
I think New Paltz, you'll see them coming out.
Well, and it is. I mean, it's also yes. I mean that now rap is winning Pulitzer Prizes as it should. Mm-hmm. But the larger issue here, of course, is the racism, and we saw this in this ad, and we saw it in another ad in which. They keep and I don't know the funders of this ad.
It's the NRCC.
No, this one. But there was another one kept on calling him a New York.
Yeah, like America for Progress or some weird.
He was born
in New York City. A New York, but they were calling him a New York City liberal, and they kept on showing African Americans coming out of the subway.
Right. Right.
And it's an incredibly racist, horrible ad. And so, you know, does that this latest poll from Monmouth, according to the September Monmouth University poll, there was the Siena poll that had Faso up by five points.
Five with a huge undecided.
According to the September Monmouth University poll, 45% of potential voters back Delgado, while 43% of potential voters back Faso, 9% undecided, still a huge number of undecided.
You'd have to assume, right, Joe? You would have to assume that this is Faso's to lose.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That this race
absolutely.
Is Faso's to
and
lose.
And he knows it.
So, political scientist.
Yeah, of sorts. Yeah.
Why go down this route? Can't you do better than this? If you're Faso, do you continue to go down the racist road?
Well, let me put it this way. The people, and Libby has a look on her face, which means she's got something here, but I have to say yes, you do because you're consultants. The people who go low and others go high are telling you it'll work. That's what they're telling you, and you're listening to them.
But if you've seen your polls, if you saw your numbers up, and now you're seeing your numbers down, is it working?
Okay, so here's the deal. These are independent expenditure ads, supposedly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's a firewall between the campaign, John Faso's campaign, and the people doing these ads.
But we all know that's Bushu.
Right. So... You know, so if John wanted to, he could tell NRCC and the other people to stop running the ads.
Right.
The thing is this. Trump talks the same way, and his base lauds him for it. They love it. It's dog whistle time.
That's what it's all about.
And that's what John is trying to do here, is to do the dog whistle to that base within that district, because Trump won it by 6 points, to get those people out to vote. You know, it's disgusting, and there are somebody who's quoted in this article, Jerry Benjamin, has walked back what he had said. So it's too bad that it got rerun in this piece.
This is a piece from the Washington Post.
From the Washington Post.
I mean, this is a national. This race is being watched.
Right, it's
national.
Right. It is a bellwether race. And if Delgado wins, you know, it definitely says something about the tenor of the Hudson Valley, upstate New York, those kinds of voters. Mm-hmm. I think that people are looking for their better angels, and these ads don't give it to them.
Right. And that would, and I understand. I'm sorry, mm-hmm. but I understand your point about the firewall. Mm-hmm. But this is also very consistent as to what John Fass has been saying on the campaign trail.
Yes.
I mean, while the imagery may not be as stark, he certainly this is what he is saying in just about every on the interview with Alan.
And so he expects it's going to work.
Right.
So your question before was, why does he keep doing it, even if he sees the polls
changing? Because it works.
They always knew this was going to be a very tough race.
Except I think, well, first of all, I wanted to say, I no longer consider those kinds of ads a dog whistle but a Mack truck. It gets more and more and more openly racist
in
general. But secondly, I wanted to say that Faso is counting on middle-aged to older voters.
Mm-hmm.
And often we do not see young voters, first-time voters, asked in polls about what their positions are.
Correct.
And I think that is the element of potential surprise
That to Ocasio-Cortez.
Right.
That's the whole point.
Right.
Well, if we look at Mr. Delgado, and I think we should call him Mr. Delgado, not just Delgado, but give him the respect he deserves. If you look at that image, the picture to the left in that ad, it has been darkened and photoshopped, so it looks like blackface. He looks like a minstrel face in that. It's shocking to me that we can get away with that. He's a light-skinned African-American person.
Of course, they did that to the president.
They did it to Obama as well. Mm-hmm. But it's no excuse. And again, I think we need to look beyond this media election. We need to look towards the future. And as more and more young people get involved, and I hope to God they do.
Well, I think you're going to see a big voter turnout from SUNY New Paltz. Because this, you know, the Jerry Benjamin quote incensed the college campus down there. The president rebuked it. I think you'll see a lot of kids coming out to vote.
And to Jerry's credit, may I just say.
And he really has said it too. He walked it back.
Yeah, not only walked it back, he knows it was wrong. And he's one of my best friends, but I have to tell you, I have great respect for him for having the guts to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And even in the very conservative area of Elizaville, where my husband and I have a little cabin, I have seen growing numbers of Delgado signs.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I think people are disgusted.
But I also think
happening.
Delgado's message around healthcare is getting through.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
I think that's
good. He has a very strong agenda
with those kids, with that kid, the little girl and her mom.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. It's getting through.
People paid attention to that.
Yeah.
I'm sure Faso John Faso is, Vera is thinking those signs are in front of people who have second home.
But they don't. Those areas are not second homes.
Elizaville isn't?
No.
Begging your pardon?
But let
begging your pardon?
I would say there are very few second homes in Elizaville.
But there's been a real concerted effort to get the people who do have second homes to register in Columbia County.
Or in Berkshire County, wherever,
they don't need their vote in New York City.
No.
They need their vote up here.
It's one out of 8 million, and it's one out of a couple hundred. Yeah.
Well, and also, because it's a national race, a lot of people who are in safe races where they feel that their candidate has an easier time, people are spending their time and money on this race.
What do you think, Jerry Nadler is going to lose on the west side of Manhattan?
Yeah, right.
So a lot of Democratic money is coming into this race as well and Republican money.
And some of the Democratic money from the west side is going into Texas.
Yes, that's right. I mean, that's amazing.
Real danger.
If Cruz loses, that's going to be
Cruz.
One can only hope.
Yeah,
the Cruz brothers are our hope for the future.
What'd you say?
Seriously, both of those men, the Cruises.
you better
let's cruise away.
George just put his thumb down.
Bye-bye. Okay.
we needed to visualize that, right?
And the reason he did, I announced it, is because this is the radio.
Yes.
Well, I mean, so we in our half a minute left. I mean, the two issues in this campaign for the Faso's campaign from the day that Delgado won the primary was that he's an outsider. The mm-hmm. press release that came out about an hour ago from the Faso campaign said Delgado heads to the polls to vote for only the third time while living in the New York 19th.
Well, give me a break.
So the carpetbagger issue and also the rap issue are the two that seem to be the ones that are being used most by the Faso campaign.
And honestly, John knows better. I'm very disappointed in him for doing this.
All right. That is it. My thanks to everybody for being here. Just a quick shout out. Joe, my God, it's great to have you here.
Thank you very much.
I hope you'll come back soon. Joe Bruschak is going to be at the Saratoga Native American Festival, and it's a wonderful event taking place on Sunday, September 16th. Don't forget to vote. Libby, thank you for being here. Good to have you here. Vera, always wonderful to have you.
Thank you.
Alan, thank you very much.
Oh, my pleasure.
We'll be back after this.